Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day out there. It's the start of summer. It's the first unofficial start of summer and the first appearance by the mayor in the summer season. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
I guess that's right.
Yes.
It's after Memorial Day. I guess that means I can wear white now, right?
You can, Mayor. He's actually in all white. He's in all white.
Yes, thank you.
He's got a top hat on. It's an amazing
thank
outfit.
Thank you, Chris.
So, Mayor, we're talking about the budget this morning. That seems to be the big news. You were on channel, one of the stage TV stations, did an interview. The fire department is out there as well. City councilors are out there rallying. Any updates on what's happening?
Well, yeah, look, so... We've talked about it, mm-hmm. and again, we should continue to talk about it because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there and some crazy stuff. I mean, I don't read the comments, but you know, my staff looks at some of that stuff, but they don't read all of them because you just can't keep up with such things. But you know, we've been reported to me that it's crazy things out there, like oh, the mayor's taking a big pay raise this year. Like, what? I have no idea where that's so like. What?
Right.
So stuff gets made up along the way, and that's fine, and we'll do our best to. And in the age of social media, you can only chase down so many things, but I will that are not true. But what is true is that the city is facing a significant budget gap, mm-hmm. And it is one that we have warned about over the years, mm-hmm. Again and again, and so. For those who have been involved in the budget process, particularly the city council, as well as, frankly, state legislators, none of it should be surprising. And, you know, we recall last year when things were tight and city council made a number of cuts, we closed down Casa Soledad, the library,
right?
Remember that? And like, people went wild about that and was like, okay, where do we cut? We did a hiring freeze. We took another a couple of other extreme measures, mm-hmm. right, to rein in the budget. People are like, oh, you're just making this stuff up. I'm like, no, I'm not making this stuff. You think I delight in closing a library? No. So then it ultimately washed out that we could keep the library open, although it's not open all that much anymore, and cut the hours back at all the other libraries. So that's a service that's been diminished. And so, yeah, we warned that this is that this is going to continue to be a tough budget year, and sure enough, things like healthcare and pensions have made it very difficult for us to balance things out. So we made a number of tough decisions, and some people can quarrel with those decisions. I don't want this cut, or I don't want that cut. But the reality is you got to cut somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly open to hearing from people like, okay, well, it would have been better to have cut this. Mm-hmm. You don't hear really any of that. Because there is not a lot of give in the budget. And so we're having these discussions with the city council. We're having discussions with the unions to see if there's any movement on their part to, particularly the unions, to relinquish some of the things that they've held sacred in the long run because they're too expensive now. So a lot of it has to do with healthcare and pensions being just too expensive that we are, frankly, too generous with those programs. We have a pension system that is one of the worst funded in the state. Mm-hmm. You and I have talked about that a lot, and yet you have a city council that continues to vote in pension base increases. They did that last month, despite our saying, time out, you got to wait for the budget because things are getting more difficult. They still went ahead and voted it in, adding $1.16 million every year to the bill. Without any debate, they voted in unanimously. Like, and so we had the CFO... And I vetoed it, and they said, well, your veto doesn't count under the circumstances. This isn't vetoable. That's an open, that is an open legal question.
Okay.
And so we'll take that up at some later point. But you can't continue to do it. Tomorrow, Chris.
Yes.
So the retirement board, the city retirement board, nobody pays any attention to the retirement board, except it seems that...
I've been watching the videos lately.
That's good.
Yes.
Because guess what? So the retirement board is again, dominated by the fire and police unions. And so you have, it's comprised of five members. The city auditor is one of them. The mayor's appointee is another. And then the other three vote in favor of the unions, as a fire union rep, police union rep, and then there's the proverbial neutral, who is proven himself not to be neutral, and as they keep adding to the bill. So before them tomorrow,
okay,
is a vote to raise the cost of living adjustment for pensions. They've proposed to do it, we understand, by 3%. And so one might ask, well, why are they raising it? Why are they raising that now? Well, it's to increase the benefits of their members. That's it. And which is fine. That's not there's nothing inherently wrong with that, except the fact that we cannot afford to do it. This is happening amid announced layoffs. This is happening amid reduced services. This is happening with a whole lot of pressure on taxpayers, and yet they continue to do it. So I don't control that. That's not subject to a mayoral veto. But there's no accountability there. And so I think people need to be paying attention to this stuff. Like there is, with all the talk around the budget this year, there's still things, there's a whole lot that the mayor does not control.
Right.
And so it's incumbent upon the council, it's incumbent upon the unions, it's incumbent upon the retirement board, it's incumbent upon the state to play a role in this, and to understand that no, we can't, we are in a position now where the things that we can't control, that they have some say over, have to be addressed. The level of state aid, the cost of pensions, the cost of health care, again and again and again, are putting pressure on the budget. We've been talking about it for a long time. People listening to the show have heard me again and again say that.
Yes.
And ad nauseum, to the point of saying, okay, we've heard it enough. Well, I know it feels that way, but the message has not sunk in. For the people who have some authority over the problem, and so I'm going to continue to talk about it, because I think that's the only way to make sure that it gets the attention and then ultimately is acted on.
We have the mayor of New Bedford here, as we usually do at 11 o'clock on Wednesdays. So, Mayor, you're obviously urging the retirement board to not do this increase.
Yeah, we can't afford it. We can't afford to be doing it. The pensions are going up a lot every single year. What we pay for pensions this year, $47 million, is almost the sum of the fire department and police department budgets combined. The sum is a little bit more than what we pay. In the next few years, the pension costs, annual pension costs, will exceed the sum of the fire and police budgets, which are the two largest budgets in the general fund, with the exception of schools. Think about that.
It's amazing. How do you survive that?
Well, you begin by not adding to it.
That's a good one, yes.
Which is what the council did last month, which is what the retirement board is poised to do tomorrow. It's the thing with pensions is it's so arcane, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what does this number mean? Like, and why do you have to fund it? And why? So, so people don't focus on it. They have no idea who's on the retirement board, and it's all sort of tucked away, but it feels tucked away. But what we're trying to do is draw some attention to it, because I think people should understand that the decisions that a body called the retirement board makes actually has an impact, a direct impact on city services and how much they pay in taxes. So that's one thing. And you look at healthcare, I showed you that chart. The one that I, put in front of the city council during my budget address a couple of weeks ago, that reflected that we pay a higher share. We, the city of New Bedford, pay a higher share in health care premiums than all the surrounding towns in Greater New Bedford. All of them.
Yes.
Every last one of them. And we can't afford to do that. That's just the reality we're in. So, I mean, my hope is that the unions will, who have a have decision-making authority over this, recognize that it's not sustainable. And it's in their members' interest that the city of New Bedford be on more solid fiscal ground than they are, than we are right now. and I just don't know how to say it any more. I just some of this is just the times we live in, when in which, you know, that we don't have a newspaper that's sort of ferreting out all this stuff and right. explaining it to people so they all understand. Everybody goes to the paper and says, okay, which everybody picks up in the morning to get a handle on what's happening. That's not the reality in 2026, and so that's why I try very hard to explain it to people and as bluntly as I can, because otherwise people are just going to rely on Facebook and social media generally for information, and that's not going to do the job. Right. They're not going to get the information they need to understand.
It can be additionally confusing.
It just fuels in. They don't know whom to believe, and so I don't know. I'm on this program, right? I've been doing this program for a long time now, and I encourage people to ask their questions. That's what I'm here for. They can ask whatever they want, and be happy to take the time to explain to them the basics on how it all works. And so, and we try to do that, but it's at least one person at a time. And we have obviously other venues to do that. There's office hours and other ways. But we're really trying hard to make sure the city's finances don't go down the wrong road here, and that's why I don't take any delight in laying off people closing down a fire engine or closing off programs or whatever it is. But that's, you know, we've reached this point, and unfortunately, it may sound like I'm saying I told you so, but I take no delight in that. I wish I'd been wrong the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the mayor of New Bedford here in the studio taking your calls at 508-996-0500. This hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House in downtown New Bedford. Great day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley. We'll be right back.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, chips, and a soda for just $6.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy, weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM, WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have the mayor of New Bedford here taking your calls at 508-996-0500. Mayor, I'm talking about the city's request for eligibility in the Municipal Public Safety Staffing Program.
Well, this is another facet of the problem that we've been discussing, right? So we've talked about state aid, and you've seen the charts that have been made available and social media as well, have been reported in other places, but state aid has dropped off significantly, as we've discussed. And this is pretty remarkable. The city got this year about the same amount of state aid as it did in 2009. It's just a few dollars off, and which is crazy when you think about how much more everything has gotten, much more expensive everything has gotten in those last 17 years. So another component of state aid that some places get is something called the Municipal Staffing Grant Program. And that is a program that was established about 12 years ago. And there were, or 14 years or whenever it was 2012, 2014, thereabouts. But in whichever it was. It was based then on the per capita amount of police staffing any city and town would have, and that the idea was, we'll give you some more money if you to maintain your staffing level. So the grant program has morphed since then to focus on both fire and police. But the most significant thing about it is that New Bedford wasn't eligible at that when it was first instituted. But what the legislature did was it said only those cities and towns that were eligible last year remain eligible.
Okay.
which sounds crazy.
Right.
Right. I mean, there's no logic to it all.
No.
But so that's what's happened. And so that has, and so every year the state writes a check to the roughly 10 municipalities and Fall River's in there, right? So Fall River gets, so smaller city, right? Yeah. Got this past year $1.6 million, which is about the cost of a fire company,
sure.
Right? So that's, so they stroke a check. And so, you know, look, we said, hey, like, if you're going to keep this program in place, we want to be part of the club.
Yeah, I get it.
So,
I get it.
So, well, so we've said that, and the state legislature has not moved on that. That's we wrote letters going back to 2018, which is 8 years ago now. Mm-hmm. We said, look, this doesn't seem fair.
Right.
So what I'm describing is no exaggeration. I think you've seen the letter that I wrote, and it is as we portrayed it.
It's
like these other places, like Newton, Massachusetts, got several $100,000. The median household income in Newton, Massachusetts is, I would suspect, about double what it is in New Bedford. Easily, right?
Right.
And so, like, why would you, it's like a whole lot of wealthy people living there, and you wonder, like, why? How does that make any sense? Well, it's the sausage that has been made in the legislature. That's what's happened, and we've said, hey, like, this program doesn't seem to be even-handed, but because I'm sure a lot of places would like to get a check from the state for fire and police staffing.
Sure.
So if you're going to leave it out, like, it's just we've raised our hands and said, we in New Bedford think that we are as deserving or more deserving than anybody here, and so please give us that money. Please include us. And it has not happened. So that is another facet of, I think people need to know, like, what we've been trying to do for many years now, going back in that particular case, 8 years to deal with this backing off of this state's commitment to state aid. And then, you're seeing it, by the way, just in general in state aid, you're seeing problems everywhere. We've talked about the problems here in Fairhaven, with the override, Middleborough laid off a lot of folks, Berkeley laid off a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It looks like some of the other towns in Greater New Bedford will be.
Lakeville's gonna.
Yeah, if it's not hitting this year, it'll hit next year for many of them. And so, but that's the writing that's on the wall, and some of it is being realized right now. So. So that's where we're. But
you people, have a regular phone call with the House delegation.
All of them,
all of them.
Yeah, Senate
and House. Yeah, and obviously not everybody's there every single time, but they're mostly there. What are they telling you about this? I mean, this seems remarkably unfair, and I don't use that word often because it's.
Yeah, I think in general, and you're. Welcome to talk to them about it. They agree that it's unfair and that we should be part of it, but it hasn't changed.
In other words, I see these guys out in front of the firehouses. I actually saw one in front of the city hall with the union, with the firefighters. But it's been going on for years.
Yeah, going back to like 2009.
It's gotta hurt, right? When you see people out there who could make a difference. Actually joining in with people to help confuse it, that they're not part of the problem. They're like they're spectators, man.
Yeah, I mean, look, they can account for themselves, but we have a state aid problem.
Yeah.
We have a big state aid problem. It's, as that chart depicts, people have seen it. If we got what we got in 2008 adjusted for inflation, we'd be getting about $13 million more this year, which would solve a whole lot of problems.
Vote graduation is this Friday night. High school graduation season kicks off.
High school graduation season starting to go through. It'll go from now through next week. And I'll be there Friday night for Voc Tech's graduation, which is great. Hopefully, weather permitting, that'll work out all right. I hope I didn't jinx them. I'm knocking on Micah countertop here, but. So I want to congratulate all them and all the graduates coming up. It's a happy day and a whole lot for all those graduates to look forward to and their families. And many thanks to the staff over at Voc for supporting all those kids. And so we're really happy for what they've been able to do. Global Learning has its graduation on Sunday, mm-hmm. and then next week New Bedford High on Thursday has its graduation. So, and then of course all the high schools across the region are having them more or less right now. Some of them, a lot of them, have had it earlier. New Bedford's two very large high schools tend to have it a little bit later than most. But for all the high schools in Greater New Bedford, I just want to say congrats to all the graduates and many thanks to their teachers for all the support they've shown over the years.
We have the mayor of New Bedford here. We'll be taking your calls in a little bit. 508-996-0400. Mayor, I was by the old Glazer Glass, the new New Bedford Robotics. I see the screens are up. They're doing construction over there. Significant investment in ARPA money by the city. What are you looking to have happen over there? What's happening over there?
Well, there's a lot happening. They've gotten a lot of funding in. Some of it was ARPA funds and about $2.2 million, if I remember thereabouts. They've received a considerable amount of state grants. Irwin Jacobs gave about $3 million to the program. And they have a commercial loan from Bay Coast Bank. So it's been, and then, you know, Mark Parsons, the founder himself, who's just, you know, gotten so much done over there, has committed a good deal of his own money, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got his own skin in the game for a venture that, you know, will make some money for him, but it's not a get rich, quick or even slowly undertaking for him. A lot of it is just, it's mission driven. He thinks that, he believes very credibly that there's a whole lot to be tapped into here when it comes to technology startup potential. Some of it relating to robotics, a lot of it relating to marine technology. And so if you go in there now, the place is filling up and it's not even done being built out. So if you walk through it, maybe you should get a tour. Lay eyes on it. We can arrange that, but I think it would be useful for you to see what they're doing. But they've got some interesting autonomous marine vehicle startups in their number of other, and they also have an educational facet to their mission. They bring in students from the local high schools to learn about robotics, and they have very sophisticated machinery that does some pretty cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's still being built out, so you can see what's being built out in the front. It's all like all those garage bays that were once part of Glazer Glass are being outfitted now for a accelerator space and for companies to be in there, for students to be in there. So mm-hmm. Mark's doing a really good job, and people have really bought into what he's doing. And so it's got a lot of momentum.
Yeah, Irwin Jacobs, that's a significant investor.
Yeah, he was here. I had dinner with Irwin last week when he was here, and he's doing well, 92 years old, still going strong, still involved in a startup. He for sure has still very much a motor, and which is pretty impressive. But he... He's supported a number of things here. So that's recently, like, new things that haven't actually gotten a lot of press, but that's New Bedford Research and Robotics is one in the Whaling Museum, the Zeitarian, I should say the Symphony, and Global Learning, a number of things. So he's been supportive in a quiet way. We haven't thrown press conferences announcing these things,
right.
But people should know that he's been stepping up for a lot of these, a lot of nonprofits and a lot of worthy causes.
You're the mayor of New Bedford here. Mayor, the housing plan you put out a couple of years ago now, you've been filling it in, building, you and your developers have been developing housing. How's the housing crisis in the city? How's that going? Or is there a crisis?
Well, there definitely is a problem, right? There's been with housing, because when people aren't able to find adequate housing or affordable, attainable housing, then that is a problem. It's a problem for them personally and their families, and it's a problem for the economy. It's all around. And so we've been working very hard, consistent with our housing plan, to remove the barriers to the to developers to add housing supply to the market here. And so that's come in the way of permitting reform, of zoning reform, of facilitating the growth of startup developers. A lot of construction companies, the local construction companies, have ventured into real estate development, which is kind of natural for them. The advantage they have is that they don't have to go out and hire a general contractor when they build something out. They can do it themselves. So it's, you know, in the way of a DIY ethic, as the term goes, it's they figured, well, they can, instead of hiring out a general contractor, they do it themselves. They can do it more cheaply and get those units on the market. So we're seeing a number of new housing developments that way. But there's more to come. There's definitely more units coming on the market, and all else being equal, when you increase supply, it puts downward pressure on prices, and so that's the way to go. I think people need to be careful about this ballot measure that's coming up in the fall, which would impose rent control across the state for not only the folks in Boston, who I guess have been pining for it, but like everywhere, even in places where, like New Bedford, where the housing, the cost of building housing is such that if you put a cap on how much a developer can make, they might not build here. They're not going to make much money, and that's who, whether you like it or not, they're out there to make a profit, and that's the only way you're going to get new housing. Right. It's not the government that builds housing. So I think, you know, it has a very superficial attraction, rent control does. And we had a debate about it here in the city last year, right, a year and a half ago or so. And I think most people felt like, it would be good to lower rental costs. We all want that, but this isn't the way to do it. It actually works at cross purposes with that goal. Yeah. So, you know, I think the way to do it is just to remove barriers to developers so they can build and keep up their properties. And that's the other thing that we have to consider with rent control, by the way, which is when you cap how much rent a property owner can get, it makes it less likely they're going to sink more money into the property. And so properties can deteriorate. And so then when properties deteriorate, neighborhoods deteriorate. Yes. So this is something that we all have to be mindful of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And there's a new development up in the north end. It's not really new because it was permitted a while ago in the planning board hearings, things like that, for a place up off of Braley Road that I think it'll be great for the city. You need more units. You need a bigger tax base. But yet there's some controversy with it.
Yeah, I think some of the neighbors are raising concerns about it. I get it. Sometimes there are concerns when something is built near your house, like how's this going to affect my quality of life? And so some of it is always in the way of the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, what we try to do, our planning board tries to do when they assess these things, is understand how reasonable the complaints are. And if it is just, well, something's being built there, that's probably not enough, right? So the city needs more housing, and we've seen it across the city. People have raised concerns, but like the reality is, the city needs more housing, and there's always something, always somebody who's going to say no, not near me, right?
Sure.
So that alone should not be enough to stop a project. Mm-hmm. If there are concerns about things like traffic, I mean, there are ways to mitigate it. If there are complaints in here, I'm just offering up some of the complaints you hear about beautification, right? Is it going to look ugly, right? Nobody wants anything ugly, right? So, there has to be a commitment from the developer to make it look nice so it doesn't detract from the property values of others nearby. These are all reasonable things, and they should be accommodated, but there should be an open discussion about it. But obviously, it cannot be the case that every new project here in New Bedford is objectionable and should be shot down.
Yeah, it's a local developer. You don't have veto rights over what other people do with their property, quite frankly.
Yeah, you don't. But as you live in the city, you do. I mean, you try to make the rules of the road clear. So you want the zoning. This is another thing that we've worked on in recent years. We've worked on zoning reform to make the rules clearer, like what can be built and what the expectations are. And in the case of form-based zoning, which is another new thing that we're doing, what it looks like. But at the end of the day, if somebody's complying with all the rules, they should be able to build.
And you want to, Mayor, you've talked about this for a while, that you want to have a business environment that's conducive to developers, because time is money. People come in and the neighbors start fighting them over small stuff. It costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money, but to your point, it's if developers of housing or anything else, and anything that could be built here, new businesses or whatever, if the general impression is that New Bedford is not a place where you want to build, because the answer is always no, then people aren't going to build here. They're not going to invest, and we want people to invest. Like any other city, we want to make sure that New Bedford is understood as friendly to business, and that this is a place where you can succeed.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in 2 minutes, and we'll go to the phones with the mayor of New Bedford. If you're on hold, stay there. If you'd like to get involved, you can. It's 508-996-0500. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Welcome back to the program. That's not really how it goes down when you die, but I can tell you, we have the mayor of New Bedford here. We're taking your calls at 508-996-0500. Mayor, we have a couple of people who've been waiting on hold.
Okay.
Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. Mr. Mayor, has the restoration of the Poseidon statue been completed?
Yes.
Okay, what's the holdup of finding it a home?
Well, I think we announced where it would be, so in fact, we talked about it.
I didn't get that. Where was it?
At Coast Guard Park.
That's a good spot for it.
Yeah, it takes a little while, but I appreciate you raising it. So we had to do, to finalize that as the location, we had to do geotechnical work. In other words, you have to dig into the ground, take boring samples in the ground to make sure that the ground can support a very heavy object like a big bronze statue with the granite base, right? So those tests came back recently. We had a long frozen winter, and it's harder to do in the geotechnical work in the winter. They came back and said that it can support it. So the site prep is going to happen over the summer, and we're shooting for an early fall installation there.
Okay, thanks for that information. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. Thanks.
It'll look good there.
Where's Coast Guard Park, for people who don't know?
Well, So Coast Guard Park is that strip of grass. It's not really like a big park, right? But it's a strip of grass that sits right between the State Pier and Steamship Pier. So just to the south of State Pier.
Okay.
Picture it. And there's a monument to a couple of monuments there. There's a monument to the USS Constitution, which was built right nearby, and then back in the 18th century. And then there's another monument there to the lightships that the Coast Guard used to man. And so that's there. There's a flagpole there. So the flagpole will get moved to one side of the park, and then the so-called Poseidon statue, the whaleman's and fisherman's statue, will be put in its place.
You're anticipating this fall.
Yeah, I think it's so. I think we said September, so maybe it's like late summer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not too far off.
No, not too far off. Poseidon returns.
Poseidon return.
Right?
That'll Poseidon 2.
Yeah, that'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, cool. That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Yeah, any more questions like that? We got other people on hold, 508-996-0500. Good morning. Thank you for holding.
Hi, gentlemen. It's Catherine.
Hey, Catherine.
Having a good day.
Catherine, I love that you can just call up and just offer only your first name.
Well, I could give my last name if you didn't remember.
No, we all remember you. That's his point.
That's all I needed.
Right.
I know. And I think I told you, my student said, repeated, you know, over the years that it sounded like the Marie, no, the chef, the French chef. Oh, anyway,
you're talking about she was portrayed on Saturday Night Live, Julia Child.
Julia Child, yeah. I don't know if I do to you or not, but that's what they always used to say.
That's kind of interesting, actually. I'm going to think about that, Catherine. I may pull up the podcast that you called in on and listen. Julia Child, are you cooking now?
No, but I will be.
All right.
Okay, and I'm perfectly happy
Chris
to be
over for lunch.
Yeah, yeah. A little cooking, Sherry, a little for the chicken, a little for me.
Yeah, whack the chicken against the counter. Yeah. So I wanted to, first of all, to say I had a one, this isn't anything you've been talking about, and then I will, a wonderful season of the New Bedford Symphony Orchestra. I was so, Paul and I were so happy to go every time, and we'll get season tickets next year, too.
Good.
I think they're a really superior orchestra, and we're lucky to have them. And, I love the conductor.
Yep. Dave Prentice, the president, executive director, is really beefed up the programming. And Terry Walkowitz, who's the educational director, does a great job with something that doesn't get as much attention, which is all the educational programs they do with students in our schools. So, it's a terrific organization. They put out a good product. The music's great, and they do a lot for the city.
And the conductor doesn't even live here. I don't know. He lives out in Milwaukee, I think. He must come in periodically.
I think that's
here,
what they do with symphonies. They just sometimes those conductors, and like I'm no expert on this, but they will be conductors in more than one symphony. I don't know about him in particular, but if they're throwing, I don't know how many concerts a year, four or five or whatever it is.
Right. Incredible.
Comes on for those events.
And the conductor is informative, but he's also humble, and he has a wonderful sense of humor. I think he sets everybody at ease, and you know, no matter what anybody's background in music is or isn't, I really think he's fantastic.
Does he make people call him maestro?
Maestro. Yeah. Maestro, I'm sorry.
Does he insist on being called maestro?
I'll be called maestro.
I don't know.
Okay.
But that's call him that. That's fine with me. And I know there are other calls, so I'll be quick about this. It seems like the average person in our city does not pay, you know, when we think about salary increases, whether it's union or non-union positions, including, you know, city positions, people need to think about the fact that when there are increases, so will there be in their salaries or salary positions, so will there be increases in the pensions and the health plans. To be able to pay and afford for the increases. And I'm not saying anything against the police or the fire people or the city folks, but we have to take that into account. And as a homeowner, all I can say is we cannot keep affording to carry the weight of the budget, which it may not be, but it feels like it to us. And people keep that in mind. It's not just salary increases. It's long-term pensions that add up. And that's it. And I thank you.
Well, you're right. They do. And as I've noted before, they've reached a point now our annual pension cost is almost as much as the sum of the fire and police budgets. It's that much.
Right.
And it's going up fast over the next several years. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, we have under state law, we have to fully fund the unfunded liability, right, for people who are currently retired by the year 2035. State law allows us to go out a few more years, and that's something that we're considering. But pushing that out to the limit is the state limit is not going to solve the underlying problem, which you're getting at, which is, well, there are a number of things that make it more expensive. So one is like the salaries, right? So the salaries do have to go up because we have to compete, right? We can't, we can cut salaries or not raise them over years, and we're not going to be able to get the best talent in city government. And that will show, without a doubt, in the services that our residents get and don't get. But then there are times when, you know, when things are tight and we have a city council or a retirement board that are voting in additional increases, and that's into pension benefits, and that's just not something we can afford. I'm all for helping people out who are on a pension or on a fixed income, but there are times when the city just can't afford it, and this is one of those times.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Mo, the mayor of New Bedford. If you'd like to ask him a question, you can. 508-996-0500. We'll be right back. It's a quick break, this one. I'm Chris McCarthy. We have the mayor of New Bedford here with us. And we have Julia Childs here with us this morning as well.
Or les fêtes du day, and we're going to start with half-bone chicken or poulard demi de saucisse. Now you need a fine fat roasting chicken like this one. And first, remove the giblets, and you really should save the giblets. They make a fine stock for soup, or you can save the liver and fry it up with some onions for a little snack. Or if you have a number of livers, you can make a lovely liver pate. Or perhaps a delicious liverwurst, which you can spread on a cracker, a Ritz cracker, a saltine. Or on bread, a rye bread, a pumpernickel.
So that's our caller, Catherine, calling in. I'm joking. That's, of course, Dan Aykroyd doing Julia Childs on Saturday Night Live. Mayor, what do you think of that?
It's a classic.
Right?
It's a classic when he ends it with cutting open his finger and the blood squirting around. And what's the line? Oops, I cut the Dickens out of my finger.
Mayor has a good memory for Saturday Night Live. So, Mayor, we're coming into the summer season. Big stuff happens in the city. Really a good time of the year. A lot of outside restaurants. Really a nice time, right?
Well, we've got the Summer Sound Series kicking off real soon, and we have, of course, like all the major events or things that this summer we're adding. I mean, of course, there's the feast, of course, and that is the Cape Verde Recognition Parade. All big things. We'll be doing stuff around the 4th, of course, especially this year. The fireworks will be on the 3rd, right, which is a Friday, and so people should remember that. But we have a good show there, and a number of other events around the 4th. And then there's a number of, like, a series of events over the summer commemorating the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And then there are other things that are new, like the Sagres, the Portuguese Navy's training ship will be in. And so the Sagres just comes in to port, I don't know, it's about every 10 years or so. So people should check that out. Mm-hmm. It's the sister ship of the Eagle, which is a U.S. Navy training ship. So that's something that also has come to New Bedford in years past. So interesting history there, going back to the Allies actually confiscating those vessels from Germany after the Second World War. So cool stuff if you're a history buff or if you're into tall ships, that'll be happening. So lots of stuff. People should just go check out the calendar that's up on the tourism website to see all the stuff. But you know, there's a lot happening. More detail to come. But it'll be a fun summer, weather permitting. Even if the weather's lousy, Chris, it'll be fun.
Mayor, you pay attention to national affairs as well. Your thoughts on what you're seeing in Iran? I mean, it's unfolding, so every day it can change. Certainly.
Well, we've talked about it before, and it's as I've expressed to you, obviously it's a remarkable military exercise, tactically speaking, and a real display of American firepower and precision. But I've been concerned from the start that the president hasn't had a strategy, and it's changed over time from regime change to unconditional surrender to no nukes, right? All those things. And it'd be great if we were able to, and then to open the Strait of Hormuz up, which of course was open before the war started. So it's not clear to me if there is some sort of truce of sorts now that, and it's not the word they're using, but that in effect is what it would be, a point at which they open up the strait again and then start to talk about other things. It's hard for me, it's hard now to believe that Iran is just going to relinquish its nukes. It also is, this, the result of this war has also been that Iran clearly understands that it can control the Strait of Hormuz with cheap drones, yep. Right? And that's that was something that, you know, really hadn't been in the offing before the war. So, you know, that's a card that they're going to be able to play in the long run to control a big part of the global oil supply. So that is leverage. And mm-hmm. So that's another outcome that I don't think anybody foresaw, including the Trump administration. So I think the most important thing that could happen is they're relinquishing the roughly 1,000 pounds of weapons grade or near weapons grade uranium. But right. but it's, even if that happens, and that would be good. Sure. Even if that happens, it's going to be tough sledding with Iran for a while.
Mayor, appreciate you coming in for the hour, taking the phone calls. We got some people on hold, but we're not going to get to them because the hour is up. It goes so fast.
It does, just like that.
Just like that, the hour is up. I guess we'll see you next week, right?
You
Mayor?
Will.
I'm not sure what the schedule looks like. We're coming up to these holidays, and
I'll be here.
The mayor will be here. I might not be, but the mayor will be here. All right, folks. Remember, stick around for Barry Mathix. Barry Richard coming up next, and of course, the great Howie Carr after that. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day.